Perspectives you have, and so you have all this stuff that's kind of put together, and you gradually kind of try and find agreeable styles and fashions that kind of fit both of you, and your home kind of takes on that kind of a feel to it, and somehow gradually and kind of magically and mysteriously, certain things start to vanish over time. And typically, and I can say this because most of my pre-marriage stuff is either gone or boxed up or somewhere else, so I can say this, that typically speaking, I would say it's usually the guy's stuff that at least goes first and maybe goes most. And I don't know if that's because guy's stuff is more offensive to begin with, or because the girls just care more about this sort of thing going in, but it's probably not a bad idea because from what I've seen, girls tend to have better taste in these sorts of things. And so, generally speaking, that's kind of what happens. And in our house, that's what happened to before we got married. I had all my sort of stuff, and probably the most notorious thing that I had was the collection of Big Gulp cups that had been accumulated over a decade of time, and so lots invested in this collection. And in my bachelor house, I had a room. I had a big house, and I was the only one there, so I had a room that was totally dedicated to just displaying all these cups all over the place. In my married house, there was no room for such a room. And so one of the first things that happened within a month of us getting married is those were gone. And that was kind of what happened in our house. And a lot of my stuff has kind of gone away, and I'm okay with most of that. But there was this one item in particular that came in with my wife that I had a particularly difficult time assimilating into our married home. And it looked like this. And she was actually quite fond of this thing. But it seemed like no matter where I was, I'd turn around and this thing was kind of looking at me, and it kind of gave me the creeps and kind of weirded me out a little bit. But, you know, eventually she sent it to Value Village of her own free will after years of harassment about it. But eventually it went away. And so I was looking this week for a picture of that, and I couldn't find one, and I eventually found one on eBay. And I don't know if you can see this. I sent the link to my wife and said, "See, I found a picture of this." And her comment was, "You owe me $30." So apparently there's still a little bit of unresolved issue going on there. But you might wonder why I'm bringing all that out. But I think it's because, really, the couch potato is the poster child for sloth. I mean, when we talk about sloth and when we think about sloth, we usually picture two guys kind of like this, right? They're sitting on the couch, they're not doing anything, they're a little bit like a slob, I guess, they got the plates sitting around, and they're just these people who sit around and don't do anything all day. Did a little research into the term, and back in the early 70s, there was this group in Southern California who kind of humorously prided themselves on opposing the fads of exercise and healthy diet, and instead kind of promoted this idea of just vegetating out before the TV and eating junk food. And back then, TV used to be called the boob tubes, so these guys dubbed themselves the boob tubers. And then one day in July 1976, a guy named Tom Iacino decided, if we are the boob tubers, what kind of tubers would we be? And he said, well, the kind of tuber we would be is a potato, because a potato is a kind of vegetable that is a tuber. And so thus the phrase couch potato was born and coined, and if you can believe it, copyrighted, the couch potato. Now, perhaps when you think of sloth, you don't think of a sloth. A couch potato, but perhaps instead you think of the animal that bears this vice's name, the sloth. Now, I looked into the sloth, and the sloth is one of the slowest, most lethargic animals in the world. I looked at one list that had the sloth listed as the sixth slowest animal in the world. The sloth was clocked at an average speed of a whopping 160 meters per hour. That means it would take 6.5 hours for a sloth to go 1 kilometer. If we had a sloth here today, And I wish we had a sloth here today. But they're surprisingly difficult to come by. But if we had a sloth here today, and we put it over by the double doors there that go into the prayer room, and we set it down there, and we instructed it to walk from that door across the front here over to the doors to the multi-purpose room, it would take that sloth approximately 12 minutes to cross this room. They are very, very slow animals. The sloth has very little muscle mass, and you can see it's got those large claws that it kind of wraps around the tree, so it doesn't even have to use its muscles to hang. It just kind of hooks its claws on. Barely chews its food. Its stomach is like an internal compost heap. It's half deaf and it's half blind, and it spends most of its day sleeping in the treetops. And once a week, it will climb down from the tree to go to the bathroom. And then it will go back up to the top of the tree to have a nap. And that is kind of the life of a sloth. And on that list of six, or where it was the six slowest things, the only things that were slower in the world than a sloth were slugs and snails. Which might be why when the Bible talks and uses terms like sloth and sluggard, we picture these creatures that move at a snail's pace. Now, with all those kind of images in mind, we come to our list of seven deadly sins. And on that list of seven things, where would you put sloth as far as where it would rank? Now, as you ponder that question, let me just clarify. Yes, of course, all sins are equally bad and they're equally wrong. And all sin separates us from God, and so we're not kind of judging one to be worse than the other, but some sins just seem to be a little more dangerous or more destructive or more apt to do some collateral damage. So out of the seven deadly sins, where exactly would you put sloth in that list? The earliest version of the seven deadly sins list comes in about the 4th century, and it's kind of tweaked and adjusted over the next 200 years. But the final list contains these seven things, and this is the order in which we have been and will continue to cover them in our series here. So those are the seven things on the list. Now just take a minute, and how would you rank and order those things? I don't know about you. My list kind of goes something more or less like this. How is your list look? Now, what I found interesting is that the person who originally made up this list was a man named Evarius of Pontus. And he started out with 8 items, actually. And he listed them in what he considered to be escalating ranks of severity. And this is what his list looks like, starting with the least severe, in his opinion. Starts with gluttony, then lust, greed, envy, wrath, sloth, and pride. Now, I don't know about you, but sloth was not at the top of my list. How many of you had sloth in the top 2? How many of you had sloth in the bottom 2 or 3? All right, that's what I expected. Most of us would kind of, generally speaking, send sloth down to the bottom of the list. Because, yes, it's wrong and it's not good, but is it really that bad? Evarius put sloth and pride at the top of his list because he said, you know, really all other sins are kind of rooted in one of these two things. But we have to ask, really, is sloth that bad? I mean, okay, it's not good to be super lazy, but top of the deadly sins list? Really? Is that where it belongs? Well, the thing is, there is more to sloth than simple laziness. And there's something more to it, and that something is what it makes it so enticing, but also so dangerous. You see, sloth is about something much more and something much greater than just being lazy. There's much more to it than simply being a couch potato. When it comes to sloth, it is not a tuber. Sloth's motto is Hakuna Matata. And as the song says, it means no worries for the rest of your days. It's our problem-free philosophy. Sloth beckons us like Timon and Pumbaa called to Simba. Don't be stressed about things. Don't fret. Don't worry. In fact, forget everything else and enjoy yourself. Which is a rather appealing offer. It was appealing to Simba, and it's appealing to us as well. However, while Simba was off Hakuna Matata-ing, back in the Pride Lands, things were not going so well. The once lush and fertile lands and fields had begun to dry up. The herds had moved on, and the hyenas had moved in. Why? Because the rightful king was being slothful and neglecting his duties. You see, although sloth may sometimes lead to and look like laziness, it is at its very core indifference and apathy. It's giving our attention to and putting our energy in lesser things to such an extent that the more important things get neglected. Cook writes in his book of sloth, he says, drug users, TiVo addicts, obsessive video gamers may be poisoned by sloth, but so are most workaholics. Sloth is not restfulness. Sloth is escapism of a deadly sort. Sloth saps our time and emotions through a favorite sports team, a new set of shoes, or obsession over our appearance, while leaving scant energy for our marriage or kids or duties. In fact, sloth can be best expressed not by a lazy attitude, but in zeal over petty matters. Sloth is a lot more dangerous and a lot more difficult to spot than we had originally thought. Being lazy and not doing anything is easy to identify, both in ourselves and in other people, and it seems to be a relatively harmless thing. But sloth can be found in busyness and activity. It can be found in anything that keeps me from doing what really needs to be done. It can be hidden in work and in play and in leisure, in hobbies, in sports, in pastimes, in study, in just about anything. Jesus often challenged the Pharisees on their slothful religious activities. In Matthew 23, he says, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You give a tenth of your spices, mint, dill, and cumin, but you have neglected the more important matters of the law, justice, mercy, faithfulness. You should have practiced the latter without neglecting the former. You blind guides, you strain out a gnat, but swallow a camel." Jesus gives this dramatic picture of focusing in on such a very, very tiny thing, but letting a very big and important thing go by. The story of the Good Samaritan, which you may be familiar with, is in many ways a warning against slothfulness. In the story, a man is robbed and beaten and left to die on a road. And a priest comes by and he sees the man, but he keeps going. And then a Levite comes by and he sees the man, but he keeps going as well. And the priest and the Levite both walk by because their devotions to other things kept them from doing what was most important in God's eyes. Well, if sloth is being indifferent and apathetic to and neglecting the things that are most important, then our next beatitude is the exact opposite of all that. In Matthew 5, verse 6, Jesus says, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled." Jesus says, happiness comes from craving the most important things. And notice he doesn't say, blessed are those who are well fed. Blessed are those who dine because they have been told to do so. Blessed are those who eat at regularly scheduled times. Blessed are those who feel a little peckish from now and then. Jesus' invitation is for those who hunger and thirst for what is right. Those whose stomachs are growling. Those whose throats are parched. Those who are famished for what is right. Jesus calls his followers to be passionate about seeing the things that are right and most important to God and seeing them come to pass. Quentin read a story for us just a few minutes ago about a great banquet. And the story that Jesus tells is prompted by a question from someone in the crowd that day who was probably trying to butter Jesus up a little bit. And so the man says, "Blessed is the man who will eat at the feast of the kingdom of God." And in response, Jesus tells a story in which lots of people who should have jumped at the chance to attend the great banquet are too preoccupied with other things. And in the end, the master says, "Go out and find those who are really hungry, and let them be filled by my feast." Do you know what I find most shocking about that parable? It's not the fact that some of the people he invited passed up the invitation. And it's not even the things that they passed up the invitation for. I'm not surprised by some of that. And it's not even the master's reaction when the guests decline his invitation. The thing that shocks me about that parable is that the things people pass up the banquet for are not terrible. They're not awful. They're not evil things. One guy says, "I bought some land and I need to go check it out." Someone else says, I bought some livestock and I need to go attend to them. Third person says, "I just got married and we need a little time to ourselves." And that's one of the most lethal things about sloth. It can sneak into anything. It doesn't have to be an overtly bad thing. It can be an okay thing. It can even be a good thing. And before we realize it, we are distracted from what's most important and our life is filled up with other things. Sometimes when we get home in the evening, we usually set about trying to make supper and whatnot. And our kids, especially when we get home later in the evening, for whatever reason, our kids often come to us and try to impress on us that they are going to totally expire on the spot if we don't give them a snack immediately. And usually we challenge them to wait a little bit, but on those days where we're kind of running behind or we know that supper is going to take a little extra long to prepare, we go ahead and we let them have a snack. We try to give them a healthy snack instead of cookies, which is what they always ask for, but we try to give them good things like, you know, like carrot sticks or cheese sticks or fish crackers or something relatively healthy. But even when we give them good snacks, if they get enough of those good snacks before supper time, when the meal comes out, yeah, they're really not that interested in eating it. And see, sloth pursues us, and it asks and it invites us to fill up on snacks. But Jesus invites us to the feast. Sloth hands out a bag of Cheetos and says, "Sure, there may be other stuff out there for you to eat, but it's really not worth the effort. Forget about it and just enjoy these things." Jesus opens the door to the banquet hall and says, "If you crave the good stuff, you will be filled." And all of that begs the question, what is it we are supposed to hunger for? I suppose there could be a lot of answers to that, but here's the most consistent message that I see Jesus giving. Starting with the verse we already read as Jesus talks to the Pharisees in Matthew 23. He says, "You're doing what you're not supposed to do. Here's what you should be doing. You have neglected the important matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faithfulness." In Matthew 11, John the Baptist sends some of his friends to Jesus. John's in jail, and so he sends his friends to Jesus and says, "Ask Jesus if he's really the Messiah. I need to know if he's the one or we should wait for someone else." And this is Jesus' reply. He says, "Go back and report to John what you see and hear. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cured, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is being preached to the poor." He says, "If you want to give John a sign that I am the Messiah, tell him that you see me doing the things that are important to God." In Matthew 25, Jesus paints this picture of the end times, and all the people are gathered and they're divided onto two sides. And to one side, God says, "Well done, good and faithful servants, come into the rest that's prepared for you." And on the other side, he says, "I've never known you, go out and away from here." And both sides are confused by, how did I get on this side? And so Jesus gives basically the same answers to both sides. And to those who are on the good and faithful servant side, he says this, For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I needed clothes, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you looked after me. I was in prison, and you came to visit me. Justice, mercy, faithfulness, caring for those who are in need, feeding the hungry, welcoming the stranger, clothing the clothless, caring for the sick, spending time with the isolated and lonely, sharing the good news with others. And as I look at that list, I no longer scoff at the notion that I might be a little slothful at times. If these are the things that Jesus said are of greatest importance, how often does something, anything, a whole lot of things, preoccupy my life, leaving me no time and energy, attention, or hunger for these things? That doesn't mean you can no longer ever follow your favorite sports team or watch TV or use Facebook, sleep in one morning if you don't have kids, stay up late watching a movie, take a day off or a vacation, do scrapbooking or crafts, or eat Cheetos or chocolate or ice cream. Doesn't mean that those things are off limits. We just need to remember what really counts, what's really important, what really satisfies. Just don't forget, you stand on the front lines. The battle is on. On one side there is sloth, and on the other side there is a hunger for the life made right. Which will you choose? I haven't had my watch on. Well, I have my watch on. I haven't been paying attention to it. But my sense is that's shorter than a normal message would tend to be. And the reason for that is because all week I struggled and I tried to add more in and I tried to flower it up. And in the end, I kept coming back to the idea, the point is so simple, anything else distracts from it. We have the two sides. One gives us distractions and tries to fill us with lesser things and keeps us away from the things that are most important. And the other side, God offers us the best and offers us the promise of being filled. And I look at my life and I weigh which of those two sides I go to the most or the easiest or the most habitually. And the point seems so clear to me. And so I hope this week as you go out, you will be reminded of the message that Satan's greatest weapon against us is to distract us from God. Let's worship together.
Father in heaven, thank you that we could gather here and praise you. And